Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The photographer Annie Leibovitz has taken some of the most iconic people photographs of our time. John Lennon and Yoko Ono, Queen Elizabeth, Bill Gates, Michael Jackson, the Obamas, Lance Armstrong, Bruce Springsteen, Whoopi Goldberg, Susan Sontag, the list goes on and on. Now the photographer who is famous for her portraits of people has put together a collection of her photographs of places. For her new book, Pilgrimage, Leibovitz traveled across the country and on occasion overseas in what she calls an exercise in renewal. She visited Walden Pond and Graceland, Niagara Falls and Old Faithful, Emily Dickinson's and Annie Oakley's homes, Monticello and Spiral Jetty, and yes, the list goes on and on. A slideshow of a few of the photographs from the book, courtesy of Annie and her publishers, is up for viewing on our website. Check it out at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The photographer Annie Leibovitz joins me now in our studio to talk about Pilgrimage and the places she visited and shot. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you.
And listeners, we want to know what's on your list of pilgrimage sites, anywhere in the tri-state area or the world, whether you've been there already or you really need to go. Leave a comment on our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Or you can tweet at us at Brian Lehrer or post it to our page on Facebook. Wherever it is, what is the place that you must or must and already did make a pilgrimage to? And Annie, you explain in the book that this was a project originally conceived with Susan Sontag. How did it come about?
Well, actually, Susan and I had an idea to do a similar sort of exercise, a similar project of places that we always wanted to travel to and visit and see. And it was actually just sort of a funny way to be able to visit places we always wanted to go to. But, you know, after Susan died, it wasn't really possible to do that project. And really the picture, I think, that inspired me to do this project was probably the Niagara Falls picture. Which
is on the cover of the book.
Which is on the cover. I was, you know, obviously having, you know, not the best year of my life, you know, various things were going on. And I took my children up to Niagara Falls, sort of a day trip. And, you know, was a little flustered and saw them skip over to a portion of the falls. And they were mesmerized looking at the falls. They were mesmerized. I walked over to where they were. I stood right behind them. And I saw what they were looking at. And it was as if you were floating. You were on top of the falls. And I took that picture. And I started to rethink this idea of places and people and ideas that I've always been sort of interested in. And I just sat down and made myself a crazy list, you know.
Of places to go.
Places to go, yeah.
On pilgrimage. So, listeners, if you go to our page right now, you'll see that the Niagara Falls shot, which is on the cover of the book, is also the first one in the slideshow of samples from the book. And, Annie, before we get off the Niagara Falls picture, it's so powerful to me. I mean, you can hear the falls in that picture. It's really arresting and it's grand. And looking at it from the top the way you do, it almost looks like an implosion. And there you were with this very serious and public financial tempest that you were in the middle of that you referred to with losses around you, standing at the edge of the falls. I don't know. Am I reading too much into it, or is it supposed to be a photograph of chaos?
This is turning into a Bob Dylan song. But, of course, I mean, why not? I mean, isn't that what's so great about, you know, photographs, taking photographs, doing, you know, any kind of art that you do, that you can, you know, go off. I can go down this road, go down another road. And this road was filled with adventure and intrigue and mystery. And, you know, to me, this was a small personal project, and it is such a – I think it's interesting that you're asking, you know, the listeners, where are they interested in going? Because that's actually really what I was just trying to point out on some level, was this – it's all out there for us all to, you know, retrieve ourselves or renew ourselves or
And our lines are packed with people who have stories of things done or that they would like to do. Andy, put on your headphones so you can hear the callers.
Okay.
And let's hear Connie in Point Pleasant. Connie, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, Annie.
Can you hear her, Annie? There's a volume control right where your headphones are plugged in, and you could turn that up. So you took a photographic pilgrimage yourself, Connie?
Yes, I did. Actually, it was to Memphis. I'm a huge fan of music, and Annie, your Rolling Stone photos are a huge inspiration. We went to Memphis to see Big Star. It wound up being one of the last shows they had because Alex Chilton died right before the show. And, I'm a little nervous.
That's okay. Well, you know what? We're going to leave it there. But it's a great story and a meaningful, and the meaning to you is clear. And let's go on to Troy.
Go ahead. In Memphis, I was interested in Graceland because, you know, it is probably one of the most visited places in America today, besides our parks, of course. And, I went back two or three times trying to understand, what it was about. And one of the last times I went, the curators of Graceland took out all of the, the ropes and the everything that holds the public back from, going, through the house. In other words,
you could get deeper into the rooms, that kind of thing.
And I walked in and it was like being in a house and you really saw the house. But Elvis never threw anything away. And they had warehouses filled of wonderful, wonderful objects to look at. And one of them, of course, is this, Elvis, his television set that he had in Palm Springs. I also journeyed to Tupelo, where he was born, and looked at the two-room, small house that he was born in. And so that, in contradiction or, alongside Graceland, is kind of a powerful statement.
Now, in the slideshow that we have, the second shot is Emily Dickinson's only surviving dress. And it's I don't even know how to describe it. It looks very sort of 19th century with lace and stuff. But that was, I presume, different for you because it was not shooting a person and not shooting a place even, but shooting a piece of clothing.
Definitely, I had to reckon with this at a certain point in the project because it became, even though I thought it was going to be about places and the Emily Dickinson homestead, which is her house and her brother's house, Austin, and they're incredible buildings, by the way. Her brother's house is, when you walk in, I was just stopped dead in my tracks because it really, hasn't changed since Victorian times, and you really can see how a Victorian house looks. But I started to sort of, stumble across, objects and this dress, of course, was one of them. And I had to sort of learn how to photograph them, in an emotional way. And I should also say that one of the things that sparked this project was, the whole digital aspect of taking pictures. I discovered by walking through Austin's house, Emily Dickinson's brother's house, which was – it was dark. It was 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock on a late spring day, and it was getting dark, and I could photograph in the dark, you need less light with digital.
It was a simple digital camera, not like
a sure
we
shot.
Would think
yeah.
of a, professional photographer like yourself who's known for, setting up things meticulously would generally be associated with.
Right. I mean, I find when I just walk around every day, I don't carry, the heavy pieces of equipment in fact, having had to carry the heavy pieces of equipment, I prefer something, very, very light.
Do you do that? Do you shoot spontaneously as you walk around the city or whatever?
Not so much in the city, but, just around, I do. I mean, I did this day at Emily Dickinson's house, and that, along with Niagara Falls, really were – it really was the beginning of – I mean, it was incredible to discover that, you know, you could photograph into the corner, into the dark corner, and you were rendering – an image that really looked like that dark corner. It was pretty exciting.
Annie Leibovitz, her new book, Pilgrimage. There's an event tomorrow night, by the way, Wednesday night, with Annie Leibovitz at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. There'll be a Q&A, a slideshow, and a book signing at 7 o'clock. You can see a link on our website for that as well if you want more information. Tomorrow night at 7 at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. Troy in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Where was your pilgrimage to?
Hello, Brian, and greetings to Ms. Leibovitz. I'm fans of both of yours. I have two pilgrimage places. One, in honor of the God-sent abolitionist, Reverend John Brown, I visit the former Federal Arsenal at Harpers Ferry, Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
My family reunion meets in August of every year. Also, once I got depressed after being laid off from my Wall Street job, and I went to San Bernardino, California to visit friends, and I was given the book In America by Susan Sontag. And ended on page 183, her protagonist says, health is a promise of more future. I found so much health in San Bernardino in the San Joaquin Mountains. Oh. I'm so grateful for Susan Sontag, and I'm grateful for you, Ms. Leibovitz, and, of course, you, Brian Lara. All the best.
Thank you. I thought about Harper's Ferry. It was, it was a place that, my parents took me to, you know, as a child. It's a very strong has a very strong history, of course.
And Troy, thank you so much. John in Oradell, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi. About 2 years ago, I visited for the first time a small cemetery with 40 graves in it in southeastern Ohio on land that was purchased by some Scots-Irish ancestors of mine. It's a shaded space on the border of a farm that ancestor had owned. And I think I must have taken something from Ms. Leibovitz in looking at this, because I returned at sunrise and at sunset, because those were the best times to take photos of these 200-year-old and 150 to 200-year-old gravestones.
Thank you very much.
I fell into in Concord, Massachusetts, fell into the whole American Transcendental group there, and there's a cemetery in Concord where Louise May Alcott, her family, is buried. Thoreau's buried. Emerson is buried. All of these very famous. It's like a poet's corner. It's very, very, very beautiful in Concord.
Looking at slide number 3, now on our slideshow of samples from the book. This is a room shot kind of darkly. Old props from Martha Graham's studio, stored in a warehouse in Yonkers.
Mm. I can't even think about the picture without crying. I mean, I went looking for Martha Graham's dress, you know, that she wore in Barbara Morgan's picture of her in Letters to the World, an Emily Dickinson poem, and Martha Graham does this beautiful kick, and I just wondered. Did this dress survive? Did this costume survive? And the company, which had gone through a lot of rough times, offered to take me up to the Yonkers storeroom, and I walked in, and that's what I saw. It was just cases and cases. There are no costumes, so to speak, left. But there was Noguchi props, and right against the back wall was the gates to the old townhouse. That was the Martha Graham studio. Yeah. So sometimes this is what is left.
Dance is fleeting.
Yes.
Photography is permanent.
Well, I don't know. And one thing for sure, having done this, is it does all go away on some level. And, you know, this book is filled with a lot of places that, like the land stays, and the Yosemite Valley, you know, for Ansel Adams. I mean, he protected that with his pictures. But this is about things that they, you know, this is about the caretakers and the gatekeepers who are trying to hold on to all of these things as they sort of do go away. But there's still a lot there. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot philosophically that one could, you know, spend time on in this whole meditation.
Absolutely. Morgan calling from New Orleans to tell us about a pilgrimage. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, good morning. It's so lovely to talk to both of you. I wanted to just briefly mention I had made a pilgrimage to Granada, Spain, to visit the house of Federico García Lorca. And I remember this, that's basically the last place that his family had seen him before he was captured, which was 3 days before the Spanish Civil War broke out. And I remember I didn't photograph it. It was more of an ephemeral experience of just visiting the place and kind of acknowledging that this was the last place that anyone saw him and his remains have never been found. And it was just so beautiful to be there and be studying this person that I admired so much and then be in front of his home, and it was wonderful. I also wanted to mention, though, the Martha Graham photo is just so haunting to me. I'm a Bennington College alum, and if you ever have a chance, we have a beautiful collection of Martha Graham photographs because originally Bennington was the college school of dance for girls. And we have a beautiful collection of her when she was in, between the ages of 18 and 22, dancing in these beautiful mountains, like the foothills of Vermont. And it's just gorgeous if you ever have a chance to go visit us.
There's some early pictures of her with Ethan Hawkins there and probably even Merce Cunningham, I think. Those may be Barbara Morgan's also. I'm not 100% sure. But the photographer who might have taken them.
And our caller.
They were both
her and Morgan, her own name. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Slide number 4 in our Annie Leibovitz pilgrimage slideshow. Sigmund Freud's couch at his study in London. What do you want to say about this? These are pretty, what would you call them? Like Persian rug kind of spreads on the floor as an actual rug and as a spread on the couch.
Well,
what were you looking
for?
I
don't know what I was looking for. Again, I think some of these places were places I had used, believe it or not, as locations for photographs. I had actually, was allowed by the Freud Museum to photograph in that room before, and they said to me, if you want to, come back anytime. And when I started this project, I thought about going back and photographing the room. I mean, extraordinary is that whole room was brought from Vienna intact. I mean, that when he fled the Nazis in World War II and he got out of Vienna, just barely got out of Vienna, he took more stuff with him than a lot of people would think they could manage to take. And basically reset up his office there. It is like a museum and like a shrine, but it's exactly the way it was when he was alive.
One more call. Jenny in Yonkers, where was your photographic or other pilgrimage? Hi.
Actually, hi. It was not even, it was sort of the opposite of photographic. It was where we went several years ago to Georgia O'Keeffe's house in Santa Fe, and a very small group was allowed in at one time. And no photographs were allowed. I'm a painter, so I was soaking it all up in my own head. And at one moment, we were all together and having to stay together, yet I found a way to sort of wander off into one little corner where there was the skull from those incredible paintings of animal skulls that was hanging there.
Were you in Ghost Ranch or were you in Abiquiu? Because there's two houses there.
It was so many years ago. It was her house. It wasn't in that. I don't think it was Abiquiu. I think it was the one we had to go all the way up that.
Ghost Ranch. Yeah, they're very protective.
Yes, extremely. And but it made it even more special because you realized how profound it was. So there I was. I sort of wandered off into a corner and saw that skull hanging, and I really viscerally felt like I was in her space. I was inside a photograph. That's what it felt like to me, inside a painting or inside a photograph, and it was very special. And without having any documentation of that, to hold on to, I still remember it as a very special moment.
That is probably, for me personally, the strongest set of pictures in this project.
Did you get to photograph? I know you photographed Georgia O'Keeffe's house in this book. Is that the exact place where Ginny wasn't allowed to photograph?
I did get to take pictures. It is open for study, and there is a whole new it's nice to hear about this. There's a whole new idea about making these places accessible. And I think if you have a study If you have a particular project that you're interested in, you know, there may be a little
bit. You can apply.
You can. And they do. There really is a kind of I found, you know, I was surprised when the Houghton Library from Harvard called me back about Emily Dickinson's Herbarium. But I didn't ever expect that they would call me back, and they did. And it does go sort of, you know, some places can go through a committee, and then they make a decision, you know, about, you know, whether you can do that. They had to take it out of a vault. But in any case, the George O'Keefe work for me was such a surprise. I mean, I remember walking into Abiquiu where her studio was, and I just, one more time, I wasn't expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was really almost brought to tears when I went around the corner and just saw her very simple bed and the view of the desert. But you know, she was the real thing. I mean, you know, she was just
no kidding.
Extraordinary. Sorry.
I can go on and on.
That's the other thing that's happened is I can go it's on great. And on and on about these.
It's
these
fabulous
subjects.
To hear you talk about. Not just the photos themselves from a kind of art analysis point of view, but the emotion behind the photographs, because that must be what drives you to be such a great photographer, the fact that you feel your subject so much.
Well, I mean, to me it goes without saying that should be there, and there was all, you know, it was packed with that kind of stuff.
Before you go, two quick things. One, I know a lot of people who these days are making a pilgrimage to Zuccotti Park. Because before it goes away, they want to at least see or walk in the middle or hold one sign, you know, for 5 minutes or whatever it is in Occupy Wall Street. Have you made a pilgrimage there?
I have not been down there, and I, shame on me. I need to get down there. So I have so many friends who sort of give me reports and, you know, tell me about it and say how wonderful it is and how well organized it is and how it's a small community and it's beautiful. So
and you said something to me.
I definitely thank you for, you know, the boot in the bottom, because I definitely – I mean, it's embarrassing actually that I haven't gone down yet.
You said something to me really interesting off the air just before we started, that old age gets a bum rap. Did you mean it in an artistic sense?
I meant that it's really – yes, of course. I meant that you start to – you know, having done this over 40 years, you start to sort of know what you're doing, and the only thing you begin – and it gets better. And the more you do it, it only gets more interesting. It's not that it's easier. It's certainly not easier, but it gets much more interesting because you understand more what you're doing. Now, it doesn't mean that – you can do it well all the time. It's like it's frustrating for me. I go through patches where I go, God, this is. I'm taking such bad pictures, right? What is going on? And then, but you know, it's a bad picture. I mean, as opposed to when you were younger, and you sort of didn't quite know really what you were doing. You know,
I think artists go in one direction or the other. Like, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony is better than his First Symphony. Take a really cliched example. But then again, there are a lot of musicians whose creative whose creativity all comes out by the time they're 23, and then they play the same thing over and over again for the rest of their lives. I don't know if it's different in visual arts per se, but I think that there are those sort of competing arcs of creativity among creative people. Some people just deepen and deepen and deepen and get more and more, you know, sophisticated. I don't mean that in the elitist sense, about their work. And other people just kind of burn out and they lose it.
Well, I think repeating something over and over again is not necessarily a bad thing. And I, you know, like George O'Keefe painted the same mountain over and over and over and over and over again. And it is a Japanese aesthetic and tradition. And I think that there's nothing, you know, if it carries you forth to the next place, you're absolutely right. The most important thing about this project for me, and you're bringing this up, is that you know, you can have talent, but it can go away, and it's I've said this before, but it's like a big baby, and you have to take care of it. You have to nurture it. You have to feed it, and that is what this project is feeding, you know, my mind and my soul and my heart, so that I can go back and take better portraits.
Annie Leibovitz's new collection of photographs is called Pilgrimage, with an introduction by Doris Kearns Goodwin, by the way. So thank you so much, and it's been great to talk to you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Bruce Davidson's Subway Snaps and yours.